this is a fairly important concept. Remember how many times I've shared that the Hebrew word for understanding, bien, means to make connections? So I want to share this with you again, and I'm going to encourage you to make a connection, because I've said what I'm going to connect this to. I've shared this with you many times as part of this program. He says, I am Yahweh. The blood will exist for you as a sign on the homes, which is Be'eth, that's the basis of Be'ereth covenant, where you, by way of relationship, are at that time. So when I see the blood, I will choose to actually pass over you on that account. So the blood is a sign for us. But God is talking about him seeing the blood, which means that we actually have to do something. We have to engage in this instruction. Then he says, and the plague leading to death and destruction shall not exist among you when I strike the realm of the crucible of Egypt. The crucible of Egypt is Mitzrayim, and it means the place of human religious and political oppression. This shall exist eternally on your behalf as a memorial and reminder. So, and the plague leading to death and destruction shall not be among you. I'm sure there's some listeners right now that are making the connection. Yahweh, speaking of Paul, the author of half of the Christian New Testament, calling him by his given name, Shaul, describing that he would come upon the scene at the time that the Moed Mikre were being fulfilled, which would be right after 33 CE. Paul's first letter was written 50 CE. That he would be arrogant. Paul is astonishingly arrogant in his letters. I mean, grotesquely egotistical. That he would be fixated with circumcision, which was Paul's primary issue with God. And that he would be also fascinated with the male genitalia. Paul was a homosexual. Yeah, his lover was Timothy. He speaks of Paul focusing on the Gentiles and deceiving them, which is what Paul's entire claim was. He said that he'd been authorized by God to have total dominion over Gentiles. And then God calls Shaul by name, and he says he is the plague of death. So if you're making this connection, if you are observing Passover in accordance with Yahweh's instructions, if you're participating in Passover, then the plague of death, which is Pauline Christianity, shall not exist among you. I've long said that the antidote for religion is the Torah. If you know the Torah, if you come to know Yahweh and his covenant by way of his Torah teaching, then you will not be victimized by religion. That's what God is saying here. The plague of death. It's not going to exist among you if you observe Passover. Why? Because Passover is the doorway to life. Religion is the gateway and the broad way, according to Yosha, to death and destruction of one soul. The Torah is the path to life. That's what Yahweh was telling us. And it's even Yosha told us that the doorway to life, this doorway, is Passover. Passover is the doorway to life. Yosha said it. Yahweh said it. Why are so few people understand what Passover is all about? Remember, we read that article from the Washington Post that said that Passover is an 8-day celebration of the exodus from slavery in Egypt? They don't get it. Passover is the doorway to life. Now, matzah is every bit as important, maybe more important, than becoming immortal. Becoming immortal separated from God is a bad thing. So becoming immortal can either be good or bad depending on whether or not you are a participant in the covenant and have been perfected by God. If you haven't, it's a horrible thing. It means you're going to spend eternity in Sheol. If you have and you followed Yahweh's instruction, remember yesterday we talked and even the day before and said, never celebrate Passover. Never have the Passover meal except on matzah, always with matzah. In other words, if you facilitate life eternal, don't ever do it imperfect. Matzah is the means of perfection. It's when our souls have the yeast, the fungus of sin, of religion and politics expunged from us. And that leads to Bukurim, which is today. Bukurim is the plural of Bukur, which is based on Bakar, which means firstborn children. Children born into the first family. The YM is just the plural of it. Children born into the first family. Firstborn children. Once we become immortal like God, which means we become like light. Light is the closest thing that we have as an analog to immortality, because light simply exists throughout time. Light is the ultimate timekeeper in the sense that it is eternal in time. And so with Passover, we become like light, immortal, no longer constrained by the physical, which is our mortality, our mortal bodies, our liability. They die. But our souls can live forever if we walk through the doorway that is Passover, if we simply answer Yahweh's invitation to meet with him. But do so, if you're a man, with the sign of the covenant, circumcision. Because if you're not a participant in the covenant, you don't want to observe Passover. And God doesn't want you to either. But if you've engaged in the covenant, if you've accepted Yahweh's terms and conditions of his covenant, and as a result, answer his invitations to party with him, to celebrate with him on Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, then you become, your soul becomes immortal, empowered, enlightened, like light. And like light, it is perfect. When we're enveloped in light, there is no darkness. It's eliminated. God doesn't just see us as being perfect. From his perspective, we are perfect when we're enveloped in his light, which is why he asks us on Matzah to come into the presence of the maternal aspect of his light. When we come into the presence of the set-apart spirit, we become like God, perfect, enlightened, immortal. And when we are like God, we can be his sons and daughters. That's what Bukurim is all about. We're adopted into his family. We're welcomed into his home, not as visitors, not just as honored guests, as his children, with all the rights and privileges associated with inheritance. Now, you've got the very creator of the universe, the owner of the universe, if you will. He's a kind of an interesting owner, and it's like the one who has built a home, wanting to give his home to his children. And there we are. That's what Bukurim is all about. It's your invitation to be part of God's family. And he's invited everyone who wants to be part of his family to join his family. He's delineated the conditions. You're not going to drag religion, politics, militarism, and economic schemes into his home and keep that rubbish outside. So he's asked you to walk away from those things. Rightfully so. He's asked that we trust and rely on him instead, which means we need to come to know him and understand what he's offering. Faith is not of any value. It's knowledge and understanding that leads to trust and reliance. Then he says, walk to me and become perfect. This is the path. It is these first 3 days, the celebration of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, of Passover, unyeasted bread, and firstborn, that causes us to be perfect. And he says, focus on, closely examine, carefully consider the terms and conditions of the covenant. Because when you do, then you're going to understand what God is inviting us to enjoy. A family relationship. The celebration of being part of Yahweh's family occurs today. Bukurim, firstborn children. And among the firstborn children, is Larry. Hello, Larry. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing today, Yada?
I am great. I understand that you told Aaron that you are Mr. Meany from Florida.
Yeah, Mr. Yeah. Meany over here.
I've had just a little background here so people know, and some listeners probably do know, is that there was a time when we first engaged together as part of this program that you came across pretty harsh. I had a very, at that time, this was goes back years ago, I had a only a minor issue with it because I looked at it as saying, Yahweh comes across really harsh against religious and political zealots throughout the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. He hates them because of the consequence of their lies. And he doesn't go after ordinary folks, the victims. He goes after the promoters. And you look at Yosha's testimony. Man, he's vicious when it comes to religious and political types. And he just absolutely tears them up and spits them out. Name call, labeling, you name it. I mean, anything that you could describe today as hate speech, that's how Yosha handles the promoters of religious. He just hammers them, religion and politics.
You know, I've got a story I wanted to tell you and the listeners here.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I was watching a show, and I watch a lot of these detective shows just for something to do sometimes, mm-hmm. just to relax. And there was a particular show I watched, I don't know, a week ago, and there was a fellow that actually murdered his own wife and child.
Hmm.
And ended up throwing their bodies in a garbage dump.
Hmm.
And he was a very religious guy. Went to church. He was a prayer leader.
Okay.
He was, led their songs. They described his wife as the greatest woman that ever lived as she could.
Can I interrupt you there just a moment, Larry? What does Yosha say about public prayers?
Not to do them. I'm going to get to that.
Okay, I thought that was the case, yeah. So we have about 30 seconds before we'll wind up here, and we'll listen to the rest of the story here in a moment. But I want our listeners to know that while Larry has softened his approach a little bit, you don't want it to become too soft. It's the same situation that I have. I'm pretty easygoing until somebody starts promoting religion, and then I bow my back. But so did God. Every mess we've got, Larry and the Ponies telling a story about one of the detective shows. Sometimes I watch them too because I'm always curious as to the verdicts of juries. I'm becoming more and more jaundiced now in terms of justice in this country, and so I watch them from time to time too. So you were telling a story of a man. He killed his wife. He killed his son, and this guy was
6-year-old daughter actually.
Okay, 6-year-old daughter, and he's really religious. He's a prayer leader in the church.
His wife, 27 years old, was apparently sexless and on antidepressants and was described as the greatest woman in the history of the universe, who would actually drop everything she was doing if she found out you had a problem and begin praying for you.
Oh, isn't that lovely?
Which means she probably should have been in a mental institution.
Right. Did Yosha ever tell us we should pray for one another? In that manner?
No.
In fact, if public prayer, in public, the two of you together, public prayer speaks of horribly. And what did Yahweh say about what he thought of the of those who prayed to him that were unwilling to observe his Torah prior to communicating with him?
That their prayers were an abomination. That's
okay.
What he said.
Yeah. So the whole basis of Christian prayer is, from God's perspective, is an abomination.
Yeah, and from mine as well, and from yours as well. Anyway, to make a long story short, they went and they talked to all these people from the church. Now, when they discussed him killing, and these were all very weird-looking people, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
All of them completely out of shape, strange. Looked like they could spend about 2 years in a gym just to spruce up a little bit.
Okay.
I mean, they had, you know, you get people that physically out of it, they're mentally out of it too.
Yeah, it shows that they have no self-respect, no ability, no backbone, no character, very little. You know, now I understand there are people who are subject to obesity. Their hormones are way out of balance. But the fact is that you ought to have a backbone.
50 of them in one place.
Yeah, you really ought. Yeah, that's true. You really ought to have more discipline. And if you have, that's one thing. I mean, I am. You know, probably have 20 pounds more than I should, and I don't exercise as much as I should. But the point Larry is making is a valid one, that there's a lot of people out there today who are just undisciplined, and it is a lack of discipline that puts us in a very negative position. There's lots of negative consequences of being undisciplined in this way and being obese for no other reason than you have no self-control.
Anyway, you're going to love this, because when they went in and talked to them, not only was she the greatest thing that ever lived, but in addition to being the greatest thing she ever lived, when they talked about him, they talked about him sort of kindly, and he did this because she had uncovered sins he was doing. Now, what happened were, you know, they found out that this... They said, well, this man pretending to be religious. He wasn't pretending to be religious.
No.
He was religious.
Of course.
And what he did was he was engaged in calling call girls over, because I guess his sexless wife, and also watching internet porn. Mm-hmm. And they talked to the preacher of this church, and he was a big fat guy at about 400 pounds. With a big cross hanging around his neck, and he said that and it's just internet porn, and his face contorted and gritted, and they all said that when they said porn.
Yes.
Yet when they talked about him killing his wife and daughter, that was not nearly as bad as the fact he was watching internet porn. And I've got news for them.
Hey, yeah, can we just stop you? Just stop you right there. And you're probably going to make this point, but I want to stop you right there. Yahweh has his top 10 list of things that are important to him, like knowing his name, knowing that he himself is our Savior, knowing that he led us away from human oppression. And then he says that he doesn't want us to be religious, that fathers corrupt their children, that only thousands are going to receive his mercy by being covenant observant. And he goes on down and he itemizes 10 things that are important for us to know. Did pornography make the list?
No, not that I'm aware of, but religion made that list.
Did making a practice of killing make the list?
No.
Oh, no. Making a practice of killing, it made the list.
It's way
up there. Yeah, you should not make a practice of killing. That's absolutely made the list. So what the guy did that in terms of killing, that made the list. What the pastor was doing, which was false witness, that made the list. But pornography didn't make the list.
No, it didn't. But, boy, you should have saw their faces contort. It goes all back to this. I'm pure idea.
Right.
And here's an idea for anybody listening to me or listening to Yada. And I'm going to speak for Yada. He's not pure.
No.
I'm not pure.
Well, correct.
It never will be. I know better than that.
Yeah, we don't tell people to follow our example. We tell people to pay attention to what Yahweh said and to Yahweh's example. Welcome back. As Yahweh tells us that Passover is the doorway to life, and that if we engage in it, that it is the remedy for the plague of death. He isn't through telling us about its benefits and its consequences if we choose to ignore it. He said, and you should choose to genuinely and completely celebrate with him a festival feast, a party, to approach Yahweh throughout all of your lives and generations, continuously and genuinely celebrating the festival feast with him as an engraved prescription for living forever. Paul wrote that the Torah was finished with Yahusha. Paul wrote that the Torah had been annulled. Paul never spoke of the benefits of any one of these festival feasts. Seems to me that God and Paul are irreconcilably different. Larry?
Yeah, well, yeah, I think when you speak in opposition to Yahweh, and for those that think they're just bad translations of Paul, ask yourself why Marcion chose Paul's letters or epistles to put into a book in order to say that Yahweh's words were no longer in vogue. There was a reason he chose Paul's letters to do that.
Well, there's a reason that the church fathers were all anti-Semites. There's a reason. And all they have to do, if you want to know the reason that virtually every original church father of Christianity, particularly at the time of Constantine, but even before Constantine, it goes right back to Origen and virtually all of them, that they were, ruthlessly anti-Semitic, saying that, every Jew should be killed, every synagogue should be burned, every... Right. Oh, demonic, of a lower life form than any animal. And the reason is, read Paul's letters. Paul begins in his first letter of Galatians demonizing Jews. And he continues to the point where his letters to Thessalonica, they are just revolting. They are far more revolting in the terminology and the vitriol that Paul describes God's chosen people than what you find in the Quran or Mein Kampf. And so, you have to ask yourself, why are they so lost? Because Paul was revolting. He lied. This God is saying that these 3 days, Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkot, that they are a celebration of life. They're a celebration of family. They're where the whole family gets together and enjoys one another company. He used the term for festival, feast, celebration twice, chag. And then he says this is an engraved prescription for living, something I've chiseled into stone that will enable you to live, and he says, forever.
Can I ask you something, Yana?
Yeah.
Do you think you could have a festival, a real happy, realistic festival, one that's full of joy, in a religious setting?
No, of course not. Because either the people are blowing smoke,
people try to do it that way.
Virtually very few people try to take the world's Orthodox Jewish population is a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of 1% of the world. And they of course, try to keep Pesach and unyeasted bread. They don't even make an attempt at Bukkotim or Shavuah or Teruah, nor Sukkah even anymore. And they try to make it a religious ordeal. And, of course, by doing so, they completely miss the purpose of these events and they forego the benefit of these events. But then you look at Christians and their religious celebration of the pagan Babylonian festivals of Christmas and Easter, and you just say, what on earth is wrong with you? Here's God saying, I have established Passover, Matzah, and Bukkotim as eternal prescriptions for living. That they are these parties that I am throwing to celebrate our life together. And no matter where you are, no matter when you live, this is for you.
Yeah, if I gave you an unfinished puzzle, and I said, I'm going to come down here and I'm going to finish that puzzle for you, and I want you to hang it on the wall.
Yeah.
And so, Yahusha comes down and he fulfills the Moed, Mikre.
Fulfills the first, he and the set apart spirit combined fulfill the first four. We're going to speak to that in a moment.
I understand. And so I said, and when this whole thing's finished, you can put it on your wall. And instead you put up a different picture and said, it's finished. We don't need that anymore.
Yeah, it's not only finished from their point of view, but it's finished in the sense of done away with. It's not finished and it's ready for framing and for us to view. Which, of course, is just stupid about Christianity is that, Yosha says no part of the Torah will be annulled until it is all or even minimized until it is all fulfilled. So long as the universe exists, and it still exists, last time I checked. I'm looking at it out here in my doorway. The reality is that there are 7 of these Moed Mikre. There are 7 of them. Yoshen, set apart spirit, fulfilled 4 of them. Can it be finished?
No.
No, absolutely not. There are 3 still to be fulfilled.
Yeah,
and he's told us
Ruach, Kippurim, and Sukkah.
And he's told us exactly when he's going to fulfill all 3.
Mm-hmm.
And now someone might say that's really an avid listener to this program and has read the book, says, wait a minute, better be careful. He didn't really tell you exactly when he was going to fulfill Teruah. Yes, he did. He didn't tell me the year. Didn't know. I don't need to know the year. He told me what event is going to transpire that's going to coincide with the fulfillment of Teruah. My guess is that you know the answer, don't you, Larry?
The West Bank will be given away.
That's correct. Israel's going to be thinned at the waist and become vulnerable, and we're going to be at the precipice of the Magog War, which is an all-Islamic war against Israel, leading to a world war, leading to the overt condemnation of America. And before all that happens, right as Israel is thinned at the waist and forced to give up the West Bank, that's when we're going to be harvested.
Yeah, and it's so a very...
Read the newspaper. So, you know, when Kerry was so full of himself and telling Jews, you either comply with my demands and you give up the West Bank or I'm going to turn the world against you?
Isn't that exactly what Yahweh said would happen?
Yeah, and guess what?
Exactly,
yeah, I know, but he came back with his tail between his legs. Came back with his tail between his legs. I told you it couldn't happen. Couldn't happen because it's not the time for it to happen.
Right, it's not the time, but it's close
to the time, by the way. It's really close.
That forces others to
right.
do its will.
Yeah, and by the way, the reason we know it's not the time is twofold. One is that Yahweh says that's not going to happen until Damascus is a heap of tangled ruins, until the government of Damascus falls.
And the other reason is we got 40 yobel that we can count.
Right. And we know when he's going to return, and we know how long this time of anguish, of war, of man just doing heinous things in this world is going to last. So we know that this Teruah harvest can't be any more than the fall of 2026, which is 12 years from now. That's the maximum it can be. And my guess is it's going to be right there on the maximum.
Well,
but that's all we've got.
Right with your, I think that you know, speaking in terms of 40 yobel, I'm pretty sure you're right. There's a lot of confirmations to the fact you're right, based on, you know, and I understand there can be problems with calendars, but there's so many confirmations, including the Aster that's going to hit. And
yes.
And yesterday you brought up this, you know, blood red moon. You know.
Yeah. Yosha was telling us that an asteroid named Apophis is going to strike the Earth in the midpoint of the tribulation, which is based upon Yahweh's 6+1, 7,000 plan and the understanding of what 40 yobel, 2,000 year increments mean, and all the mileposts along the way that are so extraordinarily profound, and we can go through those in a moment. It is obvious that that asteroid has to strike the Earth, named Apophis, on Friday, April 13th of 2029. It's the midpoint of the tribulation. And sure enough, that is when Apophis is supposed to, at this point, be within the Earth's satellite orbits and barely miss the Earth, but God said it's going to be followed. It's going to be nudged in its orbit, and it's going to strike. And you find that affirmation, and then you find that the year that he says he's going to return, and one of the signs of his return is going to be that the moon is turned to blood, and you find that there is a full blood moon right on the festival feast of Passover, unleavened bread, and first fruits, and 2033, and there is a blood moon on Sukkah, the day that we begin the millennial Shabbat in 2033, in complete accordance with his predictions. But most of all, he tells us also the generation that witnessed the return of Yisrael to the land and the flowering of Yisrael from it being a scab of human religious decadence. For so many years, that the generation that saw the return of Yisrael to the land would be the last generation before his return. And so the last Yobel, the last year where And the Yovel means the year where debts are forgiven, our debts, for example. Slaves are freed. We receive our freedom in his Torah. And the land is returned to Yahweh. That's a Yovel year. 40 is the time throughout Yah's Torah, prophets, and Psalms testimony of a time of testing, and endurance at a period of time that we ought to look at as multiples of four. Even Passover, the Passover lamb, comes into the home 4 days before Passover. That 40 Yovel is 2,000 years. 2,000 years from the time that Adam and Chawa were expelled from the garden, which was 3968 BCE, to the time that Yahweh, with Abraham, enabled the means for us to go back to the garden and live with him, to camp out with him through the covenant. He enacted a celebration of Pesach with Abraham in 1968 BCE on Mount Moriah. And so on Mount Moriah, in 33 CE, which is exactly 40 Yovel from his establishment of the covenant, Yahusha, on Mount Moriah, becomes the Passover lamb. His soul serves as the means to remove the fungus of sin from our lives on matzah. And he becomes the example of the firstborn child, the firstborn into Yahweh's covenant family on Bukurim, on firstborn children. And then the Spirit enables the benefit of Shavuot, the promise of seven, enriching and empowering us. Welcome back to Sharing This. Larry made a statement that says that my evaluation of the timing of Yahweh's return seems reasonable to him. Larry knows this, but I want to make the point abundantly clear. It's really not my interpretation of Yahweh's timing. He has really given us every possible indication. I mean, you almost have to be purposefully ignorant and irrational not to figure out God's plan based upon the 6+1 formula that he's given us and all of the things that he's done along the way, where we know exactly the day that Yahusha walked into Jerusalem to be cut off but not for himself, the 4 days before Passover, predicted 500 years in advance of the event. So if you recognize, because we were up now to the fulfillment of the first four mikra, which means that the Torah has not all been fulfilled because there's three left, that 40 Yovel from 33 CE is 2033. It would be year 6,000 Yah. And so it's abundantly obvious that Yahweh is returning and it won't be his second coming, but his seventh. He's going to come and return. And if you are not already part of the covenant, by the time he returns, you'll be annihilated because of the nature of his life. He's not coming back as a man. He's not coming back in corporeal force. He's coming back like the brilliance of the stars. And unless you are also light, he won't survive his return. But that's going to be October 2nd, 2033.
I'm not questioning the year 6,000 Yah or the 6+1 plan. That's what the whole seventh day of rest is about. It's foreshadowing Sukkah.
Right.
But I was saying, as far as calendars, you know, there's people that there's people, scholars, that debate truly what year it is, you know, based on going from BCE to CE. And I think it's accurate. I think 2033 and 33 CE are accurate. Some people say 31 CE as an example.
I don't have a problem with if anybody has applied the logic and all of the evidence that's available to us in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, I don't have a problem with somebody saying, you know, I think it's going to be 2031 or 2030, for example. If it shows that you're focused on the right material, you're analyzing it thoughtfully. The reality is, if you look at and this is the clincher for me, if you look at the prophecy from Daniel, it has Yahusha coming into Jerusalem 4 days before Passover in 33 CE. So, you know, you start with that and say, okay, well, I've got a pretty good fix on 33 CE. And you know that for certain that the first temple, the one where all the materials were prepared by Dodo to David and then actually built during Solomon's reign, that it was dedicated in 968 BCE. That's exactly 1,000 years from 33 CE.
Yeah, like there's a mile marker there. Yeah, I agree.
Right, yeah, there's a mile marker there. And the flood occurred in 2968 BCE. We know that from the timing of not only the timing that is provided in the Torah, but also the timing that is provided by the Merkel impact crater that caused the upwelling of seawater that caused the regional flood through Mesopotamia up through the Black Sea area. And so, and then you look at the genealogies and the timetables that Yahweh was so painstakingly provided, and I know some people just go numb, for example, with the genealogies and numbers, but there's a reason that he provided this timetable for us, is so that we could do the math and know that Adam and Chawa were expelled from the Garden of Eden in 3968 BCE. And, you know, you do the math and you realize what a Yobel year is, and you realize that that with 33 CE obviously being a Yobel year 4000 Yah, then it's absolutely obvious that the only Yobel year for Yahweh to fulfill his promise to return within a generation of the time that Jerusalem and Israel celebrate the return of his children, Israelites and Yehuda, is 2033. It's it. There's only one time, and there are three mikrae which are yet unfulfilled. One of them, he's told us, is going to be fulfilled before the tribulation becomes violent. That's Teruah. And then the other two, he's specifically said that, you know, they're going to be fulfilled right on his time, on his day, which would be year 6000, yeah, 2033 from on our calendars.
Yeah, well, I'm in agreement, and I think it is 2033.
Yeah, and so that doesn't give us a lot of time, and the world is going to get very nasty between now and then. Larry, thank you for participating. I want to thank Glenn also, and Nick, who called in from Wisconsin, got the blast of information. I want to thank you all for listening. Have a wonderful Bukurim, First Fruits.